When I see attendees show up, I will ask them to identify themselves on Zoom. I'm not seeing any yet.
The webinar is now live, and I'm going to mute and check out here.
So you're muting, but you will still be there, right?
Correct. I'll be here.
Okay. I'm seeing one attendee so far.
Arthur, are we visible to the world or just when we're talking, or how does that work on your end?
We're all visible.
All right, Mr. Chair, we have a legal counsel for the applicant now online.
Did Arthur? Okay. Looks like he froze for a moment.
I thought that was me, but.
Oh, yeah. Now it says my connection is unstable. That's great. I have been having occasional internet fallout. I've got high bandwidth, but every once in a while it just freezes. So if that happens, you guys will have to humor me. So what I was saying is that I just see Kristen Campbell and one call-in user, so one dial-in. Jennifer, I don't think that a dial-in user has the ability to identify who they are. He or she can't tell us who that is unless Duncan puts them on the phone.
I think they can allow them to talk. Indicate when they want to testify, if and when they want to testify.
We'll leave that to Dustin to figure out. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm sorry, let me just bring up the agenda. So I'm calling to order the Hood River City Planning Commission public hearing for Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. It's just after 5:30 p.m. We are meeting via Zoom pursuant to the governor and the mayor's emergency orders concerning COVID-19. We are all doing our best to make sure that we maintain the required level of public participation and that the public is able to be heard. So I appreciate people signing up in advance and appreciate people being patient if you are having trouble hearing us or seeing us. We're going to start with planning director's update. Jennifer or Dustin, who's going to do that?
I'll jump in and do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a heads up for up and coming work, today is the last date for rebuttal for the co-housing application. So we've received the applicant's rebuttal and we will prepare that for your continuation, which will occur on September 21st. The applicant anticipates coming in, speaking its rebuttal, and then you would proceed into deliberation as planned. Then after that, October 5th, we will have a request for rezoning and preliminary subdivision plat, quasi-judicial hearing, and I will prepare notice as well as packets for you in anticipation of that hearing as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we have a public hearing. So let me switch to my public hearing script here. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call to order the September 8th, 2020 hearing of the Hood River Planning Commission. My name is Arthur Babbitt, and I will be presiding tonight as the chair of the Planning Commission. Let me begin with a description of tonight's process and a few disclosures required by state law. First, our function in these land use cases is to review the record for each application, take public testimony in a hearing such as this, and then determine whether the application meets or does not meet the applicable approval criteria in the Hood River Development Code. It is not our job to be more restrictive or lenient than these approval standards allow, but rather to interpret and apply the approval standards as written. If you have any questions as to what are the applicable approval criteria, they are listed and analyzed in the staff report, which was issued for each application prior to tonight's hearing. This will also be explained as part of the staff presentation for each item. Second, we are required to render an impartial decision on this application. This means that we cannot have a personal financial stake or bias that would prevent us from making an impartial decision. Before we begin each item, I will call for disclosure of bias, ex parte contact, and conflict of interest from each commissioner. Anyone in the audience will then have the opportunity to question any of us about these disclosures. Our decision tonight will be final unless appealed to the City Council. To appeal our decision, you'll have to participate either orally or in writing before the close of the record and the item that you're interested in. You must raise before us any issue you wish to preserve for subsequent appeal to the City Council or to LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals. You must also present to us any evidence you might wish the City Council or LUBA to see. Once we close the record on an item, that will end your ability to raise new issues or present evidence. Let me describe the order of events for the first hearing on tonight's agenda. First, we will hear the staff report, which is a verbal rendition of the written report that was issued prior to tonight's hearing. Second, the applicant may present testimony. You can assume that we have read the application and other material on the record, so please focus on any changes to the proposal or any new information. We also want to hear from the applicant any objections to the analysis and any proposed conditions in the staff report. Finally, we ask that if there is opponent testimony later on, the applicant should keep careful notes and, in your rebuttal, respond to that opponent testimony. Frequently, the public testimony on a land use application pertains to how the development will function or what impacts it will have. The applicant is often in the best position to answer those questions. Third, anyone in favor of the proposal may testify. Fourth, we will then take neutral or questions neither for nor against. After that, we will accept testimony from anyone opposed to the proposal. Finally, the applicant has the right of final rebuttal. The applicant has the last word because an applicant has the burden of proving compliance with mandatory approval criteria. After that, we will check to see if the staff has any parting comments following the conclusion of all public testimony. Finally, after everyone interested in these matters has had a chance to testify, we will close the record, deliberate, and may render a decision tonight. Our decision, however, is not final until it is reduced to writing and officially issued. Our decisions are final unless appealed to the City Council. To appeal one of our decisions, you need to participate orally or in writing before the close of the record, and you must raise before us any issue you want to preserve for such an appeal. If you need additional time to prepare your testimony, you can ask for a continuance or let the record be kept open. If you want either of these options, you must make the request during the public testimony portion of the items you are interested in before we close the record on that item. Here are some basic rules for presenting testimony in tonight's hearing. Number one, only present testimony in the order I just recited and do so only at the podium. Well, I guess we don't have a podium, so it's going to be via Zoom. Number two, begin with your name and mailing address. Number three, please limit your testimony to applicable approval criteria identified by staff in the staff report. Our decision is governed quite strictly by these approval criteria, so you should tailor your testimony to those criteria. These are the only issues you may make that we may take under consideration. If you believe that other or different criteria apply, please explain those and explain why you think they apply. Number four, failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence with sufficient specificity to allow us or parties or the parties to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal to City Council or to LUBA based on that issue. Number five, failure by the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues related to the proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow us to respond to the issue will preclude an action for damages in circuit court. Number six, finally, we may set time limit on the presentation of testimony tonight, although there is no limitation on written argument that may be submitted. That is procedural introduction for tonight's hearing. If anyone has any questions about the process as we go forward, feel free to use the raise hand feature. And let me just remind you how that works. At the bottom of your screen, if you click on participants, a panel will open to the right, and I believe you will see as a participant, as an attendee, you will see the raise hand function below there, and you can let us know if you want to ask a question. And Dustin, I believe if someone's on the phone, they're going to, can you remind me, they have to star 69 or something. What do they have to do first to unmute themselves?
Well, we'll ask them to mute and I'll get back. We lost our caller in, so we have no one who's calling in right now.
Okay, great. If we do get a caller in, you may need to give them directions. Yeah, I see we have two. We have Kristen Campbell and Lisa Irwin. So that looks like we've got the applicant and the applicant's attorney, which sounds right. So are there any questions about procedure? Lisa or Kristen, do you have any questions about procedure? If you raise your hand, we'll unmute you. Okay. I'm seeing a hand. Kristen has her handwriting. Dustin, can you unmute Kristen Campbell?
Kristen has been allowed to talk. I placed that. We'll see if she has a chimes in.
Can you, Kristen, you need to unmute and you should be able to speak now.
I would just like to verify that you can hear my client Lisa Irwin by way of phone. Or will she have to affirmatively unmute herself if she were to want to answer
questions? Well, why don't we ask that now? Before we go any farther, let's make sure that we can hear her because that's important. Dustin, I see Lisa Irwin as a panelist. Is she able to speak now?
Yeah, Lisa, I'm going to allow you to talk and then you'll have to unmute yourself and we'll test this out.
Yeah, I don't want to go farther before we know that works. It shows there is muted right now.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We do, perfect, excellent. Perfect. Okay, so we have the ability to hear both Kristen Campbell and Lisa Irwin. Kristen, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Great, now let's keep going. So that was questions about procedure. We will now consider the item on tonight's agenda, file number 2020-14, an application by Lisa Irwin and Tim Roddy for a variance from the maximum allowed building height to construct a roof structure over an existing three-story deck, an existing third-story deck in the R3 zone. A quorum of the Planning Commission is present. In fact, the entire Planning Commission is present. And I will now ask all commissioners to disclose any ex parte contacts, conflicts of interest, and bias in this matter. So let me go in the order that I see you on the screen. Megan, do you have any conflict, nope, bias, or ex parte contact?
I have none.
Okay, thank you. Tina?
I have none.
Okay, Sue?
No, I have none.
Okay, Mark?
I have none.
Okay. Bill?
I have some maybe extraordinary or extraordinary experience as a developer as well as a homeowner in both the last couple houses. I've had a roof deck over living area, which I guess that would, I don't know if that would fall into ex parte contact, but I certainly have some learnings on that front.
So
I don't know that I have bias or I, yes, so.
So Bill, the general idea on ex parte contact, you know, assuming that we consider that ex parte contact, is for you to disclose what you learned from your experience so that parties involved in this will all know what is in your head and they have a chance to rebut it or to question it.
Yep, understood.
Tell us what you learned.
And it was kind of weird because I was trying to figure out if I should disclose that as ex parte contact or not.
Never hurts to do it.
Yep, doesn't hurt to do it. So I was a developer of the townhomes on Sherman Street behind the courthouse. There were 6317 Sherman was the address. There were kind of roof decks on six of those units. We pursued two different waterproofing technologies. One was a paint on roll-on technology that's not what the applicant is using. And then we ended up with a membrane type technology with a wooden deck system over it. And then I would say in the house where I live now, have a very similar system with a roofing, you know, commercial roofing grade material on a flat, slightly sloped deck with a wooden floating deck system over it. I guess my experience is that the current solution I have in my house does not leak.
Okay, thank you, Bill. And people have a chance to question you on that. Erica?
I have none.
Okay, and now it's time for my disclosure. And my disclosure is going to be short, but I believe that I have bias, and I will be recusing myself from this hearing, and I will not be describing the bias because I think it's smartest not to contaminate the discussion with my existing bias. So at this point, I'm going to, Sue, are you officially co-chair, or I know Sue has volunteered to run the meeting, so we probably, let me run a vote to get the commission to agree to let Sue run the meeting, and then I can turn the virtual gavel over to Sue. So given my bias, I will be recusing myself. Would someone like to make a motion to appoint someone else as chair for the remainder of this meeting.
And Sue, you're sure. Okay taking over? Go ahead, Dina.
Oh, I was going to say, I assume they talked about this previously, so I will make a motion that because Arthur is recusing himself from this hearing, that Sue will serve as chair of the Planning Commission for tonight's hearing.
And so Mark, I can second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion by Tina and a second by Mark to have Sue Powers chair the meeting for the remainder of this hearing. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, I will call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Let's see your thumbs so I can see you. And Erica?
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. I'm going to abstain from the vote, but we had six yeses on that, so the motion passes. And Sue, you are in charge, and I think I will simply get out of here. I don't think there's a need for me to close the meeting. You guys are capable of adjourning at the end. So I'm going to get out of your way so I don't contaminate this proceeding.
So Arthur, before you get off, there's one thing I just want to say, because the original question you had was whether or not I was officially vice chair, which I am not, as far as I know. I know that was mentioned in that one email, so hopefully I'm not, because I don't know about it. So that's an issue we can take up later, but I'm happy to take over tonight.
Yes, and the only reason I asked that was because I saw in the memo it said that you were vice chair, and I was thinking,
right.
I might have missed the meeting. I did miss one meeting last summer.
But you did not miss a thing.
Okay, in that
I
case,
think I was
well,
the only one there, and I.
Maybe it happened in the night when I wasn't there.
It could easily have happened. Anyway,
so I'm never even vice chair.
Okay.
Just as a reminder before I leave, we've heard disclosures. We haven't heard challenges of disclosures. So I'm going to step out of the room now, and good luck with the hearing this evening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Arthur.
Okay, so I'll pick up there with his statement and pick up the script. And the next part of that does say, would anyone in the audience like to question any commissioner on any disclosure, ex parte, bias, or conflict of interest, or otherwise challenge the participation of any member of the commission? So I don't hear anything. I don't see any hands raised. Would any commission member like to make a motion to disqualify any other commissioner from the hearing in this application? Nope. Okay. So next would be the staff report.
Thank you. As a little bit of background, this proposal came to me first many months ago.
Whoops.
This proposal came to me first many months ago as a building permit that was routed from the building department to the planning department for review. And in that review, I determined that the proposed roof structure to cover an existing third story deck exceeded the maximum allowed building height, and looked into it further and realized that we have a non-conforming existing structure, but could not find a provision in the code that would allow me to approve the proposal at the ministerial decision level. So there was quite a bit of back and forth between staff and the applicant, and the upshot was that the applicant then ultimately applied for a variance, which is what you have before you tonight. So as I mentioned let me back up a second. The applicable code provisions that you're working with tonight are the R3 standards. The property is located in the R3 zone. The non-conforming structure provisions in section 1705, and then of course the variance provisions in 1718. And of course this is being processed as a quasi-judicial action, which is covered in chapter 1709 of our code. As I describe in detail in my staff report, the structure, the original structure was built when the allowed building height for the zone in all of the residential zones was 35 feet. That was later changed after this structure was permitted and reduced to 28 based on community input through a survey and updates, many updates to the zoning code, and that was one of them. So as I described, this is a non-conforming structure, and because the height of the roof that is proposed exceeds the current allowable building height and would expand the volume of the building that is above the currently allowed building height of 28 feet, it cannot be approved as a non-conforming, a change to a non-conforming structure, because we cannot, at a staff level, increase the non-conformity of a structure. For the variance, as you recall, we have four criteria that the applicant must demonstrate that they meet, and you must agree that they meet in order to approve. So briefly, the four criteria. The first criteria is that there are unique or unusual circumstances that do not typically apply elsewhere. As I describe in the staff report, the applicant has said that the unique and unusual circumstances in this case is that there is intense heat and sun exposure on the southwest facing third story deck of the existing house that's causing expansion and contraction of the deck material, that they have tried to repair numerous times over the years unsuccessfully. That is leading to cracking, that is leading to moisture getting into the structure and causing some structural damage as well as an unusable deck. In my staff report, I described that that is unclear that that scenario is a unique or unusual circumstance. We do have many structures in Hood River that were permitted at the 35-foot building height. There are also many structures in Hood River with elevated or rooftop decks. And I don't have a good or feasible way to inventory how many we're talking about. But the sun and wind and rain exposure is not necessarily unique to this property. All structures in Hood River are subject to some pretty severe weather at times. The second criteria is that the benefits of the proposal are greater than the negative impacts on adjacent lawful uses. And the applicant points out that the proposed roof structure would not be as tall as the existing roof peak of the house. It would sit a little bit lower than that, and it would not exceed it. And so I made the point that it would not negatively impact adjacent uses because it's not taller than what is already there. We received two comments, one that was in your staff report and one that came later and was sent to you by email from nearby property owners who object to the variance application. However, neither of them are adjacent property owners. So I don't have any testimony from adjacent property owners in this case. The third criteria is that the circumstances or conditions have not been willfully self-imposed. And the applicant points out that the allowable height limit of 28 feet was adopted after construction of this house or after permits of this house were issued. In staff report, I acknowledge that, yes, that is true. The change in allowable building height was not self-imposed by the applicant. What's not clear is whether the circumstances that have led to the specific condition that's giving rise to the request for the roof structure was self-imposed. It was potentially a function of design and construction. However, I do agree that those circumstances were not purposefully self-imposed by the applicant. The fourth criteria is that the variance request is the minimum necessary to alleviate the hardship. The hardship being that the deck structure is in disrepair and they're not able to, they have tried several times to repair it and without success. And so the solution that they are proposing is to cover the deck area. It is pretty clear that if a roof is the only viable solution to the problem, that the proposed dimensions of the roof and height of the roof appear to be the minimum necessary to cover the deck structure. However, what as indicated in some comments from the building official, and I had a conversation with her today just to sort of circle back and take a look at this a little bit more. You have received some additional comments from the applicant about some of the work that they have done over the years to try to address the problem, and comments that they provided from their contractors who have looked at the problem. It does appear that there may be alternatives to constructing a roof over the deck structure that would be an alternative to the variance or would not require a variance. The example that the building official described to me was to remove the deck structure, re-insulate, if there are heat issues, re-insulate that area over or underneath what the deck is now, re-insulate it, reconstruct it with new plywood, new roofing material that has just enough slope to drain, and then construct some kind of raised decking material. The building official recommended composite decking. There might be other options in this case. In any case, it needs to be a non-combustible material because the area is located in a wildland urban interface area, and the fire chief has commented that the construction materials need to be non-combustible. Another potential, that option, as I understand it, would likely be more expensive than the repairs that have been attempted in the past. Off the cuff, the building official estimated somewhere between $5,000 to $15,000. Don't hold me to that, but that was sort of a rough estimate on her part. Another alternative would be to, and probably less palatable alternative would be to forego the deck altogether and to reconstruct as I described, finishing it with roofing material and leave it as a flat-ish roof with just enough slope to drain the area. So I am not a contractor. I don't claim to be, I'm not an architect or designer. I don't claim to have those expertise. That is the information that I have been provided. Your job tonight is to make findings and determination about each of the four criteria to determine whether the proposal meets all four criteria in order to approve the variance request. And to do that, you can ask the applicant for additional information. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can answer and any clarifications I can provide about the materials included in the staff report. So I think I'll leave it at that and happy to take questions.
I'm sorry, Jennifer, can you talk to the comment in Exhibit H, which talked about the original house not complying at the time it was built? I understand that at the time the construction was started in 2006, the height allowed was 35 feet, but then in 2007, it was changed to 28 feet. So is there merit in this Exhibit H, or is it not true?
You know, it's not clear to me what specifically the issue is that the commenter thinks was not, did not meet code. And it's not clear to me that building height was what they're referring to. I will say that it is a little bit unclear to me in the building permit records what point the building height was measured from. As I explained in my staff report, when we have a sloped site such as this that has a slope greater than 10 feet, we measure from the low side. We take a point 10 feet above the lowest existing grade elevation and we measure from there. It appears to me that, and that point on this site was 118 feet. It appears to me that at the time that the house was permitted, the planning staff may have been measuring from finished grade, but I can't verify that for certain. And I don't know whether that is what, I'm not really sure what the app or what the comment is referring to specifically.
So Jennifer, I have a question along those same lines. I think there was something from the applicant that indicated the height was 32 feet, 10 inches. Do you know where that comes from or how that was measured? I don't remember exactly where I saw that.
The information that was in the planning department review did not specify that. Double checking these attachments here. I think it just said that it was lower than 35 feet. It just said the allowed height was 35 feet, as you noted on the stamp on the attachment A, I believe it is. Not A, I'm sorry, C. Attachment C, the second page of attachment C. So no, I don't know specifically what that's referring to.
Any other questions for Jennifer? Yeah, Bill.
So you made a comment that said that you didn't feel that there was any way that you could approve this request administratively. And I'm wondering what you meant by that. I mean, were there other approval options other than a variance that were considered?
The other approval options that were considered was really came down to the non-conforming structure provisions that allow for modifications to a non-conforming structure if it does not increase the non-conformity. In this case, the non-conformity is the building height. And while it doesn't increase the overall height of the structure, it does increase the amount of structure that is above the current building height.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is consistently how we've been interpreting that provision. For instance, if you have a garage and a setback and you want to add up, we tell people you can't continue to add up into a setback. You have to, you can only add up where a structure might meet a setback. So similar analysis is applied to different types of nonconformity.
Okay, thank you.
Jennifer, one more just question. If Hood River had not changed the building height for residential, would we be talking?
Probably.
If Hood River in 2007 had not changed the height allowance from 35 feet down to 28 feet, would this request by this owner be crossing our desk or your desk?
probably not. Having said that, it is a little bit unclear to me whether the methodology used to measure building height, not just what the height allowed, what the allowed height is, but whether the methodology used to measure building height has also evolved over time or changed. Because as we measure it today, as I said, we would be measuring from 100 at a point 10 feet above 118 feet, which would allow a maximum roof elevation of 163 feet. And it appears that the proposed roof structure the existing structure is 166 feet, so it is taller than that. Sorry, looking back at my notes. And there was not a precise elevation provided for the proposed roof structure. It calculated out to between 164.33 and 164.83. So let me do some quick calculation. It may still be slightly above what we would today measure the 35 feet at. 35 feet measured today from 118 existing grade would be 163. And I estimated the height of the proposed roof structure to be 164.3 or 0.8.
Okay. Any other questions for Jennifer?
No, I think she just answered mine.
That's getting down pretty far into the weeds.
Yeah. So you're saying the top roof line now is at 166. There are just so many numbers on here. I want to make sure I'm understanding them correctly on these diagrams.
Yeah, on page 5 of my staff report, at the very top of it, it says staff estimates the height of the existing structure is approximately 166.15.
I was looking at the drawings, but okay. And this is approximately 2 feet below that.
Correct. I did provide a diagram of how I was looking at building height and calculating it in attachment C2, I believe. Show some line notes about the existing roof peak being at 166.15.
Okay, so does everyone have their questions answered? Are you good with that, Tina?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So in that case, I think we can move on to the applicant's testimony.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to promote Kristen Campbell to a panelist. She'd be allowed to talk, share screen. And if Kristen, you want to allow Lisa to go first, you can let me know once you once you're promoted. And it looks like she's somewhat close. And Kristen, you'll have to unmute.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, yep. We can hear you.
Okay, so I can keep my portion very concise. The staff report was very thorough. I appreciate that. Also, we have provided a detailed account of the substantial time, effort, and money, in addition to consultation with no less than 8 reputable local construction professionals over the course of the last 12 years in an attempt to resolve this issue, again, caused by this very intense direct sun exposure. I would like to again emphasize that the proposed cover will be 2 to 2.5 feet below the current roof peak and the roofline of neighboring structures. Otherwise, I will defer to our application unless you have questions, which we're happy to answer. I would also like to give my client the opportunity to correct or address anything so far.
So there will be an opening for the applicant's rebuttal. But if we want to go in the sequence, does Lisa want to speak now in terms of her own testimony? Or Dustin, how does this usually work? Do we want to go through the proponents and the neutral and the opposed and then?
Yeah, Lisa has also been promoted. She'll have the opportunity to speak now for questions, and then we'll go through. This is kind of their opportunity and to make their case outside of writing. And for you to ask them questions.
Lisa, if you've heard anything so far that you feel like you would like to either correct or address, now would be your opportunity. Otherwise, I would like to keep you on to address any questions the commissioners might have.
Yeah, the only thing that I was uncertain about and we've tried to figure out is where the measurement point was. And it's probably likely that it was at the finished grade. We are calculating more like in the line of 122. And then the only other thing is the house began construction in 2004 and was completed in August of 2006. Okay. Did you hear me?
Yeah, we did hear you.
I'm new to this, so I haven't done
this. Yeah, no, that was good. We heard that. Yeah. So if there's nothing else you want to add, I don't think we have any other speakers. Is that right, Dustin? There's no one that's going to propose a neutral or opposed position?
We have no other attendees on the meeting right now to testify in favor, against, or neutral.
Okay. So does anyone have any questions for the applicant?
I guess I have one question. This is Mark Frost. You mentioned that the architect that designed your project was Art Larson. Could you just give us some background where that architect is located?
He was from Hood River. He lived there many, many, many years and was a longstanding architect in Hood River. I believe Art retired. We last saw him maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and he moved up to Wenatchee where his daughter is.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, so what I see next on the list here, Dustin, is staff recap. Is there something the staff wants to reiterate?
That's an opportunity if something's come up in testimony to recap. I don't really have anything to recap. What I would just note that was pretty obvious in my staff report, I didn't reiterate it verbally tonight, is that I didn't make a recommendation one way or another, approval or denial. I left that pretty open for you. I tried to lay out the information as I know it and for you to determine and make findings on the four criteria.
Okay, so I think given that we are at the end of all testimony, if I understand that correctly, so we close the hearing at this point, and then we as the commission will deliberate. And I guess specifically what, just to Jennifer's write-up here, we just want to remember that what we really have to do is look at the four criteria to approve a variance. And I don't know if we can just deliberate openly, but we really have to address each of those four items one by one and make sure, because all of them have to be acceptable, not just one or two of them. So we'll do that. But who wants to open deliberations? Anyone have any comments?
This is Erica. And I think my comment, being an architect and seeing decks around the Pacific Northwest for 20 years, is that I agree that there's alternate solutions to a roof, that there are systems that can be used on flat roof decks that have exposure other than a structure built above it. That's the main thing I picked up from the discussion.
Okay. Let's see, I'm gonna just start, I guess, asking people. So Megan, do you have anything you wanna add?
Not right now, no. But somebody else might spark something.
Okay, I'll go yeah. next. And so this
okay,
is
Mark.
So
okay.
This is Mark. And again, I mean, Erica and I are in this weird position where we have an opinion based on our professional backgrounds. Again, I'm an architect myself, but I wouldn't want to, dissuade or change the reviews and the research that you've done with several contractors and other people. What I would say, so I also agree in the idea that, the way that I've designed roof decks is to actually keep the heat off the membrane. And that's done with the concrete pavers on top that protect the deck material and below. But that being said, and I'm not here to offer professional opinions on the way to construct a roof deck, where I struggle with this application and part of my questioning earlier is that if at the time the architect decided that roof decks should be covered and that six roof decks, let's say there's six roof decks and most of them are covered, there's a understanding that, the roof decks are an important part to keep the sun off these decks. And in the cases where these roof decks are covered, the materials are performing well. And that the city of Hood River changed or made a change to the building height. And if at the time of design, the architect had known of what great exposure that southwest roof deck on the third floor would have been, and if they had designed it originally to have a roof, we wouldn't be talking. Or if they designed it originally and 5 years later, it was found out that it was just too hot and Hood River had not changed the height limitations, they would have put a roof on it like they're proposing and we wouldn't be talking, right? So in my mind, I agree that Hood River is a blazingly hot place. And I can completely understand that in an early design, you might think you might be able to get away with a certain roofing material. And through, through time, you notice that it's just not playing up. I've heard lots of stories in town where people didn't realize how hot Hood River is, right? People are building south-facing elevations with big windows, so we don't have to get into that. But I think it surprises everyone. So I think on the unique circumstances, I think Hood River does have some unique circumstances. Did they change since the original design? No, but I think, given the, I'll say the lack of foresight originally in the design. I can see how the unique circumstances have led to this failure of the roof. Do the benefits outweigh the negative impacts? So clearly we have a building today that is not performing. And so the benefits of making the building perform, keeping the water out, I think outweigh the negative impacts. Have the conditions be willfully self-imposed? I don't see that the owner here is at fault because Hood River has changed the building height. I'll say Hood River has. And is it the minimum variance? Is it the minimum effort to protect this roof? It seems that since it's below the ridge of the existing roof, I think they're doing a minimal job. So in my mind, that's kind of where I'm struggling with. I think there are probably other ways of dealing with it, but I feel like the solution that they have come up with, if Hood River had not changed the building height, we wouldn't be talking. And so it's a good way to mitigate the issue.
I agree with everything Mark said, and I just want to add that I think that there is a environmental benefit of letting them protect that surface so they don't have to keep dumping building materials into it just to fix the problem.
I guess I'll jump in. Honestly, I'm struggling with this one a little bit. Am I unmuted? Yeah. I'm struggling with this one a little bit too. Height restrictions are a significant deal in this community. And similar to setbacks, I mean, these things are on the books for a reason, right? It's not just about blocking views of neighbors. It's really also about keeping our buildings in scale with the surroundings. And so when I first started looking at this, and I saw, exceeding height restrictions, I was like, geez, I don't know. But then when you bring up the whole part, to Mark's point about, well, this was a problem that wasn't a problem when this was built. It only became a problem when the city changed its zoning. Now I see both sides. Is this the only solution? That I don't know. I mean, I guess, they've talked to multiple builders and engineers, and we have two architects weighing in. I guess I don't feel qualified to say whether this is the best solution or not. But I guess I'm torn because I do think height restrictions are something we shouldn't mess with lightly. So there I am, firmly on the fence. Sorry, me, Bill.
So Tina, I just want to get some clarity on that because I felt like both Mark and Megan were pretty clear on going through each of the four criteria and felt like the applicant passed all the criteria. Are you saying they do not in terms of, I guess, the minimum variance?
I guess if I were, in terms of the height setback, which one would that fall under? I guess that would fall under unique or unusual circumstance. Is it unique or unusual enough that we're willing to waive that height restriction? But then on the opposite side is the willfully self-imposed, which clearly is not. So that's why I'm on the fence.
I'll go.
Okay, yeah, Bill, could you address each of the four criteria?
Yep.
Because that's a really clear way to understand it. Thanks.
Basically, reading from the staff report, reading from the zoning ordinance says a variance may be granted if it meets all of the following criteria. So it's not one of two, one of four, two of four, three of four. It has to be four of four. I guess, and in my opinion, I don't feel that there's anything particularly, or at least I don't feel that the applicant or anyone else here tonight has made any significant case that this is a unique or unusual circumstance. We all live in the same place with the same climate with similar sun exposures from all different kind of points in town. So for that one, I haven't seen anything here that is unique or unusual. So I would say no on number one. Number two, the proposal's benefit will be greater than any negative impact on the development of lawful adjacent uses. We did have some neighbor commentary on this. However, I don't believe that given that this is below the existing roof line, I don't think that it's going to have that significant of a neighbor impact. And I do think structure protection probably would override that. So I would be a yes on criteria number two. Criteria number three, I think staff, applicant kind of could make the case that yes, this is not something that's been self-imposed. I agree with that because of the ordinance change. And then number four, I guess the minimum variance to the hardship, as I understand it, is that they have a leaky deck, a leaky roof deck. I think there are solutions to resolve that which require no variance at all. So the minimum variance in my book is zero. And I think there are technologies out there, and there are roof decks all over town with south-facing decks that are over living space. So I would be a no on number four. As I'm a no on two of four, I'm a no.
Okay. Thank you. I'll jump in here and go next. The unique or unusual circumstances, I think the fact that the code changed after the house was built is a unique circumstance in this case. I don't think the sun exposure is a unique circumstance. I think that's a normal circumstance. But I do think there are unique and unusual circumstances here. The proposed benefits, I think, are greater than the negative impacts. Again, because it's lower than the existing building. So I'm a yes on that one. I do not believe these circumstances were willfully or purposely self-imposed. So I guess that makes me a yes on that one. And the last one is the hardest one for sure, the minimum variance. I'm not an architect. I'm not in any kind of development work or have very little knowledge outside of what was given, the facts presented here, which I guess is good. But I think it might be the minimum that has the longest term impact. So if I think of it that way, then I would say I'm a yes on number four. So that makes me a yes on all of them. I guess I just want to add on that too, the commentary in the application about talking to, getting it engineered and talking to a couple construction people who confirmed that was the best solution. So that kind of drove my thought process in terms of a long-term solution being the way to go.
Do you want Tina and Erica to walk through the four? Chair, or
I think Tina's done that. Erica?
Well, Erica was, yeah.
I'm on the same page as Bill.
Okay, so I think that makes you a yes, right?
And I'll no for unique circumstances, no. Yes for benefits outweigh the impacts, yes for conditions are not willful, and no on the variances minimal.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And sorry, Tina, did I didn't get write down what Tina had surmised on the floor.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm a little bit on the fence. Without Commissioner Babbitt's here, we have six. So what do we do in the event of a tie, Dustin or Jennifer?
I believe that a tie fails. Dustin can correct me on that, but you need a majority to approve.
Correct. You would also, in the past, we would have to go through a little bit of a process and see, based on deliberation, is there any way or any materials that would change any of your ideas? And this is a Chair Babbitt special when it comes to a tie, the discussion and the reassurance, is there no more information in your deliberation that would allow you or cause you to change your opinion one way or another?
I mean, go ahead, Bill.
I'll ask one other question. So, I guess the question is, do we have a tie? And then my other question would be, I know in some cases where there's a tie that a recused person can be brought in if they've heard this. Is Arthur, I don't even see him on the line, I guess, or maybe he's an attendee. So what's the process for that, Dustin?
He has dropped.
About whether there is in fact a tie. It's not clear to me.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Should we take a straw poll at this point?
Yeah, I think we do have a tie. I don't see how this is unique or unusual circumstance, I guess, is the one that I'm stuck on. To Bill's point, I mean, we have houses all over this town with lots of decks and balconies facing south. So I'm loath to waive our height restriction for something that I don't feel is, an unusual situation.
So Dustin, procedurally, do we need to first put forward a motion and get a vote and confirm one way or another if it's a tie? Is that kind of where we stand?
Yeah, you have to make it, you would have to make this official. Commissioner Irving referred to something known as the law of necessity. You would have to exhaust your opportunity before you could call in somebody who has recused themselves of this already. So this is where you would have to, really make the effort to provide some definitive and exhaustive deliberation before we called, or before I were to call Arthur back in.
The one thing that I'm struggling with for everyone is that, it's not the role of a planning commission to get into how to detail a roof, but I'm not actually completely convinced that this roof as designed is going to keep enough of the sun off that this won't continue to be an issue, right? This roof will continue to have sun on it. It'll continue to have snow piling up in it. And really, without a better waterproofing system, as we've described earlier, right, it could continue to fail. And so, where I struggle with a little bit is this idea that this roof is actually going to perform the issue. And again, it happens to be two architects on this planning commission, and we're not here for our professional thing. But what I struggle with is that we're, asking for a variance, and I'm struggling with a system that I don't think is actually going to solve the problem. I think based on what I said earlier, there's other decks on the building in this residence that seem to be performing okay. But I actually don't see it for this location. Don't know if that adds anything or not.
Well, counter that, in the application, it talks about talking to two contractors who said this was the solution. This was the best long-term solution.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. Bill, you look pained.
I mean, I'm kind of stuck with where Mark is. I mean, at the angle of the sun and the coverage that this is going to give, and the fact that it's going to be blowing rain and everything else in this thing sideways, there are other technologies out there which will deal with waterproofing this. And it may be that the specific residential contractors consulted was not in their area of expertise, but there are certainly waterproofing systems that could waterproof this deck as is. And there's a number of companies that someone could call to get them to do that. I'm have a really hard time saying that this is a reasonable, as far as enjoyment of the deck and pleasure and sit out there when it's too hot and all this other stuff, I mean, that's not our decision criteria here. I mean, I would love for these people to have their covered deck, and unfortunately it was not constructed at the at, you know, at the original time of construction. And I think we're pinned in with what we have available to approve it. And I don't feel like we have any way to do it.
All right.
So does anyone want to make a, ready to make a motion on file number 2020-14?
Okay, this is Mark Frost. I will make a motion to approve file 2020-14, Irwin-Roddy residence, and subject to the conditions as described in the staff report. And that's it.
Okay, any second?
I'll second.
Okay, Megan? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
So I can't see. Are you just raising
your
hands?
Yeah, so Mark's an aye. Yeah,
Mark's an aye. Megan's an aye. Erica?
No.
Okay, Bill?
I'm a no.
Okay. And who am I missing?
Tina.
Oh, Tina. Sorry, Tina.
I'm a no.
Okay.
Okay.
And I vote aye. So that's three yeses and three noes. So that is a split decision, Dustin. So I guess is there anything, other comments? Is that what we try to do? Any other comments that we want to try to sway each other with?
We're somehow different motions.
What's that?
Somebody else can.
Or a different motion, yeah.
Yeah, you're still in deliberation. Your motion has failed. At the point where you have more deliberation or alternative motions to be suggested by.
Okay.
I guess one comment is for those of you who are would like to approve it camp, it's not super clear to me that staff findings support approval as is. I mean, Jennifer even says as much, so I can't go back to Mark's motion and suggest that there's anything in there that could stand appeal, because there's nothing in here that actually supports the conclusion of approval. Jennifer, so at a minimum, if we're trying to get this thing approved, the findings have to be different than they are now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I mean, I think on number one, in terms of are they unique circumstances, I think we've all recognized that there are decks facing south. And so, is it unique in Hood River? No, but what I'm struggling with is this idea, I think, that Sue talked to, which is that if Hood River hadn't changed, this height restriction, they would have been able to remedy the problem. So it's unique in the circumstances that now all of a sudden it's an issue. It's not just about the south exposure. So I agree with that point that Sue had made.
But then do we open a can of worms where now every house that was built in this interim period or before we change the zoning, then they're going to say, well, this was approved, so I want to go back and do XYZ because I don't like the way something operates mm-hmm. in my house. I worry a little bit about the league.
Yeah, no, I think that's valid to
force of our code.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Dustin or Jennifer, do you have any commentary on how we typically are to view unique and unusual? Is it in the particular site, neighborhood, town, any more information?
It's all on the burden of the applicant. What are the circumstances that make this unique? So I would say yes to everything you said. Is it that part of town? Is it this particular zoning? Is it this particular lot configuration? Is it this particular architectural style? Time of year when constructed, ability to retrofit, topography, you know, you could take into any account, but that's the burden of proof carried by the applicant. So those are all qualifying characteristics. It's what did the application say? Do you find the applicant has moved you, to make a positive finding that this circumstance is unique and uniquely attributable to this instance? Or are you unique enough to deem it unique? It's not once, it doesn't necessarily have to be once in a lifetime, but certainly of general applicability is, you know, not the standard. That help?
So when I look at it that way, Dustin, I do see that this being, I guess that reinforces my belief that this is a unique circumstance because of that unique location and the southwest exposure. So there's going to be a lot of third story decks in here, but they're not all going to have that same exposure. But I guess the one that I am most wondering, or I guess somewhat waffling on, would be whether or not this is the minimum they can do to alleviate the problem, the issue. And I extended my concept of that to include the idea of it being a long-term solution. So and maybe that's a mistake. Maybe the least they can do is try some other solutions first or investigate with other contractors or I don't know if anyone wants to try to give me more information along those lines, whether or not this is really the least they can do. And
I guess my comment might be, it seems like if this are truly a problem and you want to waterproof that area of the house, you just put a roof on it and you could stick a roof on it that complies with the existing or that would certainly be less than what they're putting there now. They're trying to put a roof that preserves deck and use and other things, but I mean, I still think they should keep the deck and put a different waterproofing solution on it. But I mean, it seems like there's always the option of just putting a roof over it. And I think either Danielle raised that or Jennifer raised that or somebody raised that. So it seems like there's certainly alternatives if they're truly trying to go for structure protection that they have other than putting that roof on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying to eliminate a hardship. What's the hardship? The house is leaking. How do you fix it? Put a roof on it. Do you want to have a deck? Investigate some more expensive technologies.
Yeah, I guess my issue with number four, the minimum variance, is that, again, not to get into detailing out the roof deck, but you know, my first question would be, as an architect, does it have the appropriate slope? And then if you have the appropriate slope, you know, do you have the right, you turn up the edges of the roofing material so you can have these pavers on top. Like, there's a bunch of stuff there that may change the height of the deck. And then can you enter from the door that you have? And so my mind starts racing through this all of this design stuff. And then I go, well, that, you know, could end up being actually not feasible. So maybe, Bill, you know, if you go through all that exploration, you end up just saying, you know, we abandon the roof deck and we put a roof over it.
You take out the door and you put a window and you roof that section. I mean, it seems like there's some options that are viable, I guess.
I can see it potentially being quite complicated and, you know, water penetration is the number one cause of architectural litigations in the world. So, you know, I can understand how, you know, we're all trying to do a good job here at, you know, coming up with the least imposing solution.
I also think that the idea of having her get rid of that deck increases the negative impact. for the homeowner.
I sort of feel here, though, that we're getting out of our wheelhouse. I mean, I think we all really sympathize with this homeowner. I certainly do. But I don't know that it's our job to try to correct what appears or is possibly a poor decision by the original architect. I don't know. I'm no builder. I'm no architect. I'm no engineer. And I don't think any of us, even if you are, it's really our place to go down that road.
Right.
I think we just need to stick to those criteria and, you know, is this unique? Is this the minimum necessary to alleviate the hardship? I see that's where we're getting hung up on it, but I think we've all said it's like, well, no, it's not the minimum. I mean, it's clear you could just eliminate the deck.
I guess
it's not
the
ideal.
The other comment I might make to sway the yeses is they haven't even given us any proof that they have a solution that will eliminate the hardship. I mean, Mark touched on this, but there's nothing that anyone said that if you put the roof on this thing, that the waterproofing technology that they've tried three different times is going to work.
Right.
I mean, when I first read this, I was like, okay, they're going to try and enclose the whole space and put a room on there. I was trying to understand what the concept was, because it seems like if you've tried something three times and it's not working, putting a roof on it doesn't guarantee that it's going to work the fourth time. So I guess one is at the minimum, but I don't even show that they've guaranteed that it will eliminate the hardship. Mm-hmm. That's the other component of that, because it's minimum, but then it has to alleviate the hardship. And I don't think we've been shown that.
It's causing a variance. It's going to change, as Tina mentioned, like other reviews that happen from this point on. I'm always, like Tina, worried about the unintended consequences of allowing this to go through, and then every other project in town, somebody's asking for a rare variance for whatever reasons. It's hard to close the barn door.
I have a question for Bill quick.
Yeah.
Why, if it's a tie, it fails anyway, so why try and change our votes?
Well, it's cleaner if it's not a tie. I mean, we could try and get Arthur back. Who knows? He hasn't heard anything. I don't think he can just jump in. I don't know what that process is, but it's cleaner if it's not a tie. So I guess I'm trying to persuade some folks that maybe four has not been met. It seems like people can get to one. Four is the one that there's a few people that are stuck on, including me. And I guess there's two. Yeah, so I guess that's why.
So Dustin, is that accurate? I mean, is a tie of, it doesn't pass, and does it matter if it's a tie versus a vote of 4-2?
Ooh. You're back.
No, I think it's just a matter of the motion failed to carry.
You need an affirmative.
So it was a motion to approve. That motion failed to receive the number of votes to pass. So now you are sitting without a... So it doesn't mean that it was denied. If your motion to approve has died. So if you have another, that's why I mentioned you have another
motion. I'll make
motion.
A motion.
You have another motion.
I'll make a motion that we deny application 2020-14 for a variance based upon the fact that it did not meet all four variance criteria.
I will second that.
Was that Erica?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I can't see your hands or anything, so
yes,
who?
You have Bill.
Say your name and then how you vote.
Bill, yes.
Okay.
Tina,
Erica,
yes.
Erica, aye.
Yes, Erica, yes. Okay. Mark?
I'm going to vote yes. And I think the conversation about the whether it's the minimal variance is the part that I've struggled with the most. And I think there's ways that we could solve this without going down, building a roof that I don't I don't see might solve the issue as Bill was just describing. So
Megan?
I'll vote yes.
Okay. Megan?
I still vote no.
Okay, and I still vote no. Okay, so the motion passes, vote of 4-2. So the application is denied.
Thank you. I will write up the final order and let you know when it's ready for signature, Sue. And for the applicant and your representative, I will send that out when it is ready. And that decision is appealable to City Council.
Okay.
All right.
Anything else?
Sue, any other matters?
I don't think so. Dustin?
We have nothing else on the agenda. Just remember, we'll be back on the 21st for continuation of co-housing. And that record will close today, or is closed hours ago. And then October 5th, we'll be back for a subdivision rezone request. So thank you very much for participating. And let me know if you have any questions in the meantime. Jennifer will craft up what we believe is your findings and recommendations. And once produced, that will start the appeal clock. So thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thanks,
okay,
everybody.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Sue, for running it.
Yeah.
Good night.